again, both of the letter and the form are nearly identical replicas of what's advised by ODE to send. So we've changed very, very little in from what their prototype letter and form would be. We want to be as compliant as possible. We're not trying to get into fights with people. You know, that's not what this is about. Again, we recognize that we want to provide it. And if we could, we'd provide it for every student. But, you know, it is pretty costly when we look at it from this perspective.
Yeah, I'll just throw something out there. I don't know if it makes sense or not. But in the letter, I mean, you could put something in there that says something to the effect of, say, 30-40% more. It costs more, 34% more, you know, which is one of the determining factors that we're using. You know, I mean, people, when they read the letter, they may think that they're going to wonder, well, how'd you make that decision? Yeah. So, without going into all the great detail that you've done, you could say, you know, you could come up with a percentage that, you know, these schools are range, the cost transportation for these schools range anywhere from 30-80% more than the typical transportation for West Exton. I mean, you know, they have to have an understanding as to why. Deeming that it's impractical fiscally, you know, $5 could be the difference because they don't know.
My only caution, and I would share things with, if somebody calls up and says, hey, why did you do this? My contact information, I have no problem sharing that information. My only caution is I want to be careful on what we send because I want to make sure that if this does end up before the State Board of Education, I've dotted, you know, every I, crossed every T in a way that we followed their guidelines, specifically.
I agree 100%. I read the letter, but I'm drawing a blank. I know you're signing it, but did you specifically state in there, if you have any questions, please contact me, for more information?
You know, I didn't, I initially did, and then I changed the last line basically to thank you for your understanding. You know, so I can change that to, you know, feel free to contact me with specific questions regarding this.
Yeah, that kind of,
I can do that.
Engaging
absolutely.
To them.
Great. Yeah, I mean, it hasn't gone out. I mean, that's so it's, we can change it in a heartbeat.
We're here all about transparency, and I think having a one-on-one with someone to talk about that stuff, you know, it's very easy for them to see the objective decision making.
I think about too, is Mrs. Hoffman aware that she may receive some phone calls wanting to speak to the treasurer as well as the treasurer's staff?
Yeah.
And everyone's prepared for that.
We may be getting some phone calls too.
You may. Yep.
And this, you know, thank you for this. We've talked about this a lot, and for me, this is extremely helpful, and I carry it in my planner every day as well, just in case.
Yes.
I put it in my pocket as I'm wandering through neighborhoods too.
Well, when you look at the graph, the impracticality, when you've got one student, and then I just lost my graph here, but what, 27 and 7 are riding?
Yeah, so I mean, when you've got, you know.
So they aren't really, if you had 14 eligible and all 14 were riding, or even 12, it would be different, but you've got 14 eligible and 4 are riding.
And
3 eligible and only 10 are riding.
And I want to be a little careful on how I phrase this because, you know, this is not a case study that we're doing. This is real people, real families, our residents, are, you know, they just choose to utilize another school. But I am interested to see, you know, what kind of responses that we get back. I am interested to see that because I think that, you know, in some cases where you have a school where, you know, 43 are eligible and 10, you know, ride, you may have 33 people very easily say, hey, absolutely, I'm already doing this. I'll take the money and run, okay? So I'm very curious to see how it will play out here in our community, you know, and how many ultimately we get letters back saying, no, we want to have transportation continue.
Well, that's my question.
That will really determine how we proceed with those different routes.
Treasurer staff is.
Yeah, so back to your question. I've not spoken to Ms. Hoffman directly. We can do that tomorrow. I've spoken to Scott directly about it because, you know, they have to direct the written request to the superintendent per ODE guidelines. My secretary knows ultimately her number is listed on it as the contact information for me, so it goes through her first. So, you know, what she's going to be directed to do is, you know, take names and numbers, and then I'll be able to contact people directly and go over any questions or concerns I have.
And I'd be curious to see if we would get any enrollments in our school from this.
I think it's going to be more like Todd mentioned, where, and you look at the one that has 43 students attending and 10 people riding, you're going to have 33 families who maybe their kid drives, or I, or maybe, or no.
No, it wouldn't be high school, because they're not eligible.
Yeah, yeah, I get it, yeah. But when you have, but they're using the transportation, or they're not using the transportation, they're going to get an extra $250. They're going to, that sounds pretty good. But the thing about it is, if they say, you know what, we've all decided that all 43 of us are going to take the bus, fine. You know, we'll run the bus.
Yep,
you know, that's our concern isn't necessarily, and I know Todd has said it multiple times, but it's something we want to get out there. We're not looking to take away a service from anyone. You know, if we have 43 kids that are going to take the bus, take the bus. But if you're going to have, you know, four people riding, and it goes back to the conversations about our community, where they see a bus driving to St. Brendan's with one kid on it. And we're spending $24,000 a year to drive one kid to school.
Right.
That's not fiscally responsible. So if you wanted to, if we're going to take 20 kids on the bus and it's going to, you know, cost the same, that's good. But if we're not, then it doesn't make sense.
I know we've asked you this before, but just as a ballpark, do you have a range as to what you anticipate would be an annual savings?
Well, I can't, you know, say it specifically because, again, we don't know how it will play out exactly through the process. But on those eight routes, you're looking north of $200,000 on an annual basis. So really, to be honest, closer to $250,000. So you're over a four-year period, you're looking at $1 million.
And then you take out, obviously, you know, does that include the
That's already includes the assumption of $250 per pupil paid.
Oh, okay.
If that would go up over the next, you know, over the time period, that would reduce. But also, our costs are only going to increase as gas goes up and you know, maintenance, things like that go up.
Can you talk for a minute about how this impacts staffing?
So, you know, as we've talked to Gavin, and unfortunately he had another obligation tonight. We wanted him to be here and join us, but as we've looked at it and said, we may be later in this year coming to the board doing a reduction in force in transportation. Now, that's not directly tied to this, okay? We're doing a major overhaul of the routing within transportation, using better software, doing better routing on it. We're trying to maximize our efficiencies within the routes. We're also, you know, and that doesn't mean that routes are going to be an hour long. I mean, let me stress that real quick.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, go ahead.
Yeah, and I just want to point out that another thing, and as we planned, and when we look at the consolidation of schools, we really tried to look at everything. And I'll just tell you that going in, we think we have a really good plan, but we understand that there are going to be some things in the new school we're going to have to tweak. But one of the things that we also did was we changed the start and end time. And when we were able to take that and look at the start end times in all of our buildings, this also gave our bus runs longer times to kind of get to other places, not to run routes, but to get to their next routes. So one of the biggest things that's helping Gavin in this has been the restructuring of our start and end times, because if you recall, we're going to be busing more kids to the elementary than we currently bus right now, and we're going to be able to do it more efficiently, to where he was saying the average bus run is 20 to 25 minutes.
Correct.
With on their route the longest bus run being 35 minutes. So it's one where we're not looking to add any times on there. He's running better. We're able to get more time to go in between the different schools to be able to get from one school to the other. So even if all these people come back and all of a sudden we have to run these again, we still are going to be in a position, and he won't know until bid day?
Correct,
probably.
Until bid day.
Bid.
You know, once the routes are bid later on, I think we do it in early August.
Early August.
Yeah, so once those are bid and we have it, because there can be situations where somebody says, hey, I only want to do a two-hour morning route and nothing else. Well, under the contract, they're allowed to do that. So, you know, we don't know exactly how it will play out until bids happen, but when we look at the realignment of the start times, when we look at the consolidation of the four buildings, allowing greater efficiency onto the buses, when we look at the overall rerouting and focusing more on some of our efficiencies, and when we consider in the reduction of those eight routes, it could result in a RIF situation of a handful of bus drivers and bus aides as we go into next school year. Even if this, even if we say, okay, we're not going to cut any of those routes, we'd still end up coming back to the board saying, hey, there's a handful of routes, or a handful of drivers that we're looking to do a reduction in force and aides as we're looking to maximize the staffing and equipment that we have.
Maximize the efficiencies of the equipment we have.
Of the buses we have, absolutely.
Yep. But, you know, the one thing that I don't think probably a lot of parents realize is that there's not a bus route for every bus route. There's not a bus for every bus route. That a lot of times they'll do two routes. They'll do their entry route, then they'll do the
correct.
Without a doubt, absolutely.
Yeah, I think most don't understand that.
So, I mean, you're running private school routes that we do for our transportation. You're running elementary routes and your intermediate school and middle school, okay? You're doing all that with one group of drivers, okay, and one group of buses. And currently we run a fleet of around somewhere between 50 and 60 buses.
We have, I think right now we have about 57 buses.
Yeah.
And we've slowly been bringing down the number of routes just with some of those efficiencies over the past couple of years, but this is by far the biggest one we would realize.
I mean, you know, buses, and you've purchased them, you know, we've purchased 13 in the past 2 or 3 years. You know, buses are not, you know, a Yugo of the vehicle world. Buses that we're purchasing are anywhere from $80,000 to $100,000 a piece. So, you know, they're not cheap pieces of equipment. You know, you would think they would be cheaper. They're just sheet metal and a frame and engine, but they're not. And
it would be more if we have to put seat belts in them.
That would add about 10 grand a bus that we've looked into. You know, so we want to look at it and say, okay, not only when we create our routes and we set this up, not only we're concerned about, you know, moments right now, but what are long-term impacts? Because if we need to add a route and we don't have the piece of equipment for it, that can be either a very expensive upfront cost, or even if we buy a used bus, which would reduce our upfront cost, we have a long-term obligation that we may be using that bus and needing to replace it, you know, in only a few years because it's a used bus. So there's a number of factors that we look into in trying to balance. The other piece too, and just being brutally honest, is it is, you know, we talked about finding contractors in the building, okay? Harder than finding contractors is finding bus drivers. And I challenge you, go everywhere, you know, around throughout Northeast Ohio, as I've driven all over this wonderful land for travel baseball, you see all over the places signs, you know, bus drivers wanted, bus drivers needed, will train, you know, I mean, apply, you know, here's the number, all this. Every school is in the same boat right now, and God bless the people who drive the bus, because the line I use is, what other job are you responsible for 70 kids and told to look the opposite direction?
Yeah.
Okay, it's just a, you know, interesting thing. They're wonderful people, but it's hard to get people into that job right now. It's hard keeping people in that job right now. So we want to be able to maximize the staff that we have and not have to go out and continue to find more as we add things.
Since we're talking about busing and software optimization, where are we at with the notifications from parents for bus stops and the new software? I know that
we do have the new software, the GPS for the busing. We've been using it primarily for route building and for efficiencies. We've been getting some mixed reviews back from the school districts that have been using it for parent portal for tracking their children or tracking when to pick up or the stop will be at their house. Basically, where the problem's coming into is the quality of the signal, either that the phone carrier that the parent is using or the area of town. So what we've been hearing is there's a lot of frustration that's been coming back to the school district from the parent saying, well, the bus just said it was here about 5 minutes ago and now it just passed by my house. It's because of bad cell signal because of phone carriers. So we haven't pulled the trigger to open that up to our parents yet. I think it may be maybe a little bit premature. I think we should go way into this slowly, maybe try a route or two, see how it goes. I do know that south of, like we're talking about south on Dover Center Road, how we have spotty reception. I'm just worried about inaccurate information that our parents may be getting when they're thinking the bus may be coming.
So as we talk through this, the district in which I live has this, okay? So it's been funny because on a few occasions I've been like, oh, you know, Dave, come on down. You know, my kids get home about 3 o'clock. Come on down and let's look at it and see. And I'd call, if my wife was home, I'd call and say, hey, let me know when, you know, Shane walks in the door, okay? Mm-hmm. So we're watching the app there and she called and she goes, oh, Shane just walked in and the bus still says it's at school.
Oh.
Like, oh. That's a problem. So we're trying to work through some of those.
Now to talk about
some other districts.
Yeah, and one of the things that they are using it for, and what's kind of neat about it, is we're hoping that this helps us. We think we have good routes. The system we think is have put good routes together, but it's one where the bus drivers come in and they run their routes like before the school year starts,
mm-hmm.
and then what happens is, since it's tracking their path, if they run another route that's more effective, like they took a turn here and that sort of thing, then we find out that it's a better route to run, we can just lock that route in, right?
Especially with our road conditions, it's one click, it'll make the change, and then that driver will have it. When we didn't have this, it would take a lot of finagling with the program trying to make those changes for just one route and multiply that by, you know, 30.
Just going back a minute, one of the things, and I completely get technology, especially when people are in their home with their phone, and whether it's on their phone, it's on the Wi-Fi or,
yep.
or wherever, I get all that. Would there be a way, one of the concerns I get from some people in our neighborhood is they're waiting at the bus. They're like, I think I was maybe a few minutes late, but I don't know if it came or not. And they're waiting, and they're waiting, and they're waiting. You know, and it's the unknown.
Sure.
Versus.
Sure.
If it's running 10, 15, 20 minutes late, if there was a way to kind of push out a message to those kids or those parents that are affected by that.
The quick answer is yes, I believe there is a way that we could group some messages to parents of buses that take, say, a route. One thing that is for sure is when a parent calls and now to the transportation department, instead of radioing into a driver, trying to get that information, where are you? They have it right up on their screen. So they would be able to say instantly to the parent, oh no, it's just coming down the street. Because one thing that the GPS does do around the district, it does track it tracks that well.
Yeah.
So the vehicle information is accurate. It's just how it links up to other phones.
So I mean, the other piece though, and to your question there is, I mean, we'll certainly look into even using like our all call system, you know, typically it's those first couple days of school.
Yeah.
You know, it's the first couple days of school that, you know,
it's like the first,
you
know, week of school.
Yeah, the first week of school.
More,
yeah. Okay, the first couple, you know, but
yeah,
but you know, there's been, and I've had the same situation with my kids. The first day and the bus is a half hour late, and you start getting that worry inside you of okay, you know, different things. So that's where, you know, I think if we're able to communicate that to parents, just saying, hey, we're sorry, traffic, you know, construction, whatever, you know, the bus is running 15 minutes late, just want to let you know, you know.
Those are the things I think people would appreciate, proactiveness, mm-hmm. of, hey, we know something's late or potentially late, just to let you know.
So. Okay, so we did our discussion without doing our motion first. Does anybody have any other thing they want to ask? No. Okay, is there a motion to approve Treasurer's Recommendation 5A.
Second.
Any further discussion or questions? If not, roll call then, please.
So, you know, once I get information back after August 10th, I'll update the board to let you know how that will look.
Okay.
Kraft?
Yes.
Winter?
Yes.
Finucane?
Yes.
Lozinski?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Okay. We now have a second hearing of the public, which can be on anything, nothing, no. Okay. Board comments?
Yeah,
I have one comment that I'll start with. Since Patrick is still here, I want to say thank you for those wonderful signs for the seniors this year. I have had such fun everywhere I drive around Westlake going, oh, there's another senior. Mm-hmm. And I ran into Tom Urich at a graduation party, and he distributed them with his son, and he said he had a lot of fun doing it and talking to the parents and explaining that they should put them up. But it was a tremendous idea.
Yeah,
it's great for the city. It's just fun going, oh, there's a senior who lives there. So I hope this will be a tradition that you might think about, you know.
The motion's been made to make it one item in your budget. So that's the plan.
Okay. Oh, well, it was a grand idea, and I really appreciate it. I think the parents are having fun with it. I don't know about the kids.
Mine's still in my front yard.
Yeah.
My son hates it because he has to take it out when he comes home.
I had a lot of selfies with kids and teachers sent back to me, too.
That is cool.
Good. I think it was.
Should share those.
That was awesome. Yeah. That was.
Thank you very much.
Just wonderful. The parents love it. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else?
That was great. Thank you.
Gee, we are a quiet group now.
We kind of. Yeah.
Okay.
Overdid it.
So that brings us to the first reading of our policies. And Dr.
I will go quickly with them. I'm not going to read each one. I'm going to just cover the spreadsheet really quick in which I sent you. First policy is 5113.02. If you do look at that, sometimes when we get policies to update, it really is semantics. And this one really is semantics to where No Child Left Behind is now called Elementary and Secondary Education Act. So it's changing NCLB to ESEA. 5610, and that is a policy that is being revised. And our current policy, which we didn't change, which should have been changed, is we are not allowed to carry over suspensions from one year to the next. And that was not reflected in our policy, so we do need to change that in there. And this one also gives more clarification for suspending kids PK through 3, which ties into 5610.03, which is under the same thing. And it was House Bill 318. And this isn't really directed. Sometimes we have policy amendments that's not directed towards our practices, but they're more trying to catch-all. So you can have school districts where students are being suspended preschool, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade, for I wouldn't call them non-serious issues, mm-hmm. but they really wanted to put some guidelines in. So if you do look at 5610, which is the third one, they do give you reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, they say, you know, here, you know, we're not saying you can't suspend kids, but one of the things that you need to do is if you are going to suspend a student who's in preschool, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade, it should really be for a significant reason. Mm-hmm. And if it is not a significant reason, you should work with that student, mm-hmm. you know, counseling and that sort mm-hmm. of thing inside there. But obviously, if they are a threat and the list reasons mm-hmm. in there where they're not saying you can't suspend students who are in those grade levels because there's a safety of other students that are involved. But you need to make sure you do that. So those are those two. Looking at the next one, which is 6320. This one, it talks about the purchase and lease of school buses. If you look at 6320, one of the big things that they do in there, and obviously sometimes you read these board policies and something happens somewhere to where they add a definition. And in this one, they added the definition of a bus, okay? So they defined a bus, I believe, to be a vehicle that can transport nine or more passengers. And so they went in there and defined it. They defined the bus. For whatever reason, this isn't a big one for us because we do go through a consortium, whether it's through a lease purchase or the purchase of a bus. We do that, but still, it was recommended to do it. 6325 is in regard to some of our federal grants, and they're recommending that we, this arose from auditor questions regarding small and minority businesses and women's enterprises, to be able to add that sentence in there, and I put it in quotes on the spreadsheet as that. 6605 is one that I did get some questions on, which is a good one to talk about, and that's crowdfunding. When it comes to crowdfunding, we are saying that we don't want our teachers, our staff, doing crowdfunding. To unilaterally decide that I'm going to put something on a website to gather money to purchase products to put inside our school. Mm-hmm. Number one, there's the expectation of maintenance. So what if it breaks? Do I fix it? What if it breaks? Do I replace it? You know, because let's say somebody crowdfunds for a computer cart, and then something happens, water spills, and half of the cart is ruined. So then they're going to come back and say, but only half of my students have computers, so now you have to go and buy those. So to be able to put in there and say, or if they say, I understand the school district just spent a ton of money on textbooks, however, I like a different textbook, so I'm going to crowdfund, and I'm going to buy this textbook, and I'm going to use this one instead. So it's one of those where that's a concern. Another one is, not like I said, not only the expectation of maintenance, but also we don't have control over crowdfunding sites. So now people are going to go out and use the Westlake name on their own. Mm-hmm. We want to raise money to buy this particular product for the Westlake City Schools. How do you know all of that money's going there? Mm-hmm. You know, now people are going to come back and say, hey, Board of Education, we donated $20,000 for this purchase, and it only cost $15,000. Where'd the other $5,000 go? Mm-hmm. And we're going to go, I don't know. You know, and we'll have that situation. So this does not cover, and Barb and I talked about it, but I thought she asked a great question, just to make sure that, you know, if somebody does become ill, or if there's a fire in someone's home and someone's going to do a GoFundMe, this doesn't cover those. This deals specifically, and if you look at the policy, I can't remember how it's phrased. Barb, do you have it up there? Where it says in here, defined as solicitation of resources from individuals or organizations to support identified activities or projects that enhance the education program. So it's specific to items, mm-hmm. and curricular type of things.
Can I question?
Sure. Yeah.
Did you consider, because there were those options, so you could, you know, just say, hey, we're not doing it, or you can
you
do
could.
It. I know where I am, and in Cleveland, we've used some sites. Donors Choose is one that's specific to
right.
education. Did you consider the possibility of, hey, maybe we want to do this. We will allow you to use this site and this site, and you have to have approval from your principal
right.
or superintendent approval?
We talked about it, and we didn't at the time. Now, this is something we can adjust.
Mm-hmm.
If we have people coming in and say, boy, we're really missing out, but we haven't had really any crowdfunding
yet. I don't think
yet.
You see that a lot here.
No, and so if it's something that we find that it's a detriment,
mm-hmm.
Then I would be open to having the conversation again, absolutely. But, you know, the advice of Neola, when they came in,
mm-hmm.
they said, you know what, they wouldn't recommend
well,
going
and
that.
When I was talking to our treasurer, too, I said, well, can I use this one? Can I use... No, you cannot use
yeah.
GoFundMe. You cannot, you know, because they don't have the checks that you were talking
sure.
about. So,
but if it's
but
one
no.
of if it's one that in the future that we
mm-hmm.
think that we're missing the boat and we're losing opportunities, I would be open to that. But as they're bringing in this initial policy,
yeah.
I would say
that makes sense.
You know, start
people,
that way.
Yeah, it makes sense to me.
This isn't fixed. It's one that we need to get in place, and I'm fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have 75402. This is another semantics one. You'll see lines go through and they added the word apps. And it's a technology one, and it's supposed to cover apps as well. 8400 removes No Child Left Behind and replaces Safe and Drug-Free Schools. No more No Child Left Behind, and that's the only added on there. 8500, clarification on page 3 regarding the appropriate team to approve dietary modifications. That's one of the things they put in there, and I don't have it open in front of me because it's first reading, but if you want to look at it, that's really, I know there's a bunch of different colors in there, but the only change is really on page 3 when it actually identifies who's on the team, and that's something that was indicated through policy reviews. That's what I have.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Easy. So that brings us to adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
To adjourn at 8:10 p.m. Kraft?
Yes.
Finucane?
Yes.
Lozinski?
Yes.
Winter?
Yes.
Motion carries.
All right. Thank you all.